We interrupt this podcast with a message from our sponsor.
Good townsfolk, have you recently noticed a distinct odor about town and wondered to yourself, what's that smell? Is it coming from Taylor's shop, Luke's diner, or across the square by the hair stand? The newsstand by Gypsy's auto shop? By God, the whole town smells.
You might recall the Easter egg hunt from over a week ago. Turns out, of the 300 eggs hidden around the square, only 241 were found. If you do the math, yeah, that means 59 rotting eggs are left decomposing in the square. Unfortunately, no detailed map was made this year to avoid a catastrophe such as this.
Answer Taylor's plea for brave volunteers this afternoon to remedy this disaster. It will be exhausting and disgusting work, but as a thank you, you will receive a 5% discount off prepared food at Dosey's, and even a 20% discount off day-old sushi.
And for listeners of Talking Fast, Taylor has a special offer. Let a cashier know the code TALKFAST, and you'll receive 15% off one of the most luxurious items in the store, a bag of marshmallows. Enjoy!
Welcome to another episode of Talking Fast, a Gilmore Girls podcast. I'm Suzanne.
And I'm Alexis.
And we're two longtime fans of the show, excited to rewatch and recap it along the way.
This week, we are recapping Gilmore Girls Season 4, Episode 18, Tick, 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 Boom. Jason and Richard are sued. Rory is upset by a decision Dean made. Dean is told to stop spending time with Rory.
Huh, wow.
And that's what you missed on Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, a lot of short sentences there.
Yeah, they like their choppy sentences. I also was thrown off by the title because I believe the musical is Tick, Tick, Boom, right?
Yeah, so that's
they
what
added
I was
in
thinking.
A third tick.
Yeah.
For drama.
Wow.
Yeah.
Before we get into things, we've got a review on Apple Podcasts to read for you guys. This one's kind of going back into our archive, so we'll see some things in here that we have progressed on.
Progress.
But this is from Boiler JJ, and they said, I like the focused discussions on the stories and characters. Little wandering off topic. Suzanne is soft-spoken, and they seem a bit unprepared. They sometimes appear to be winging it. But they are new at this and getting better. I'm eager for them to use their postgraduate literature knowledge to analyze storylines and character arcs to provide more in-depth understanding.
Yay. And that was a 4-star, I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think getting new microphones definitely helped us out.
Yeah.
In terms of audio. But we definitely are still new at this in terms of tech. So if anyone ever has wise wisdom for me, I do the Audacity sound stuff. I'm always open to listen.
Yeah, we have gotten much better. I feel like, oh my gosh, for visual context for everybody, I'm being attacked by a kitten right now.
Mm-hmm. You're wandering off topic or no.
Yeah, I feel like we have gotten better at, I mean, we definitely still go on tangents, but
I feel like that's the fun spontaneity of a conversation.
Yeah.
You know?
And I don't think that we ever seem unprepared anymore. We were always pretty prepared, but I feel like we've gotten better at seeming prepared.
Yeah, having the preparedness reflect out into the podcast itself, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so that was from our archive from a longtime listener of ours, and we still want fresh stuff, so if you want your review read on the podcast, let us know by leaving a review on Apple and Spotify even, or you know, we'll find anything, I guess. Just send a pigeon to us and we'll read what you said.
Yeah, my cats will eat it.
Oh, okay.
Well, poor pigeon.
Poor pigeon. Whatever happened to all the pigeons? That's what Lorelai should have been asking instead of the anvils.
That's true.
Okay, moving on to our next segment of our intro stuff. We have our initial thoughts about this episode, Tick, 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 Boom. Still got the cat going.
I tried to get rid of him.
What did your cat Jonesy think of this episode?
Well, I don't know. He got neutered this morning, so I feel like everything is a bit traumatic to him right now. But I also agree that this episode was kind of traumatic. Like, there were so many bad things that happened. It was hard to, like, find a gazebo moment, I think, in this episode, because it was just drama and, like, explosions left and right. Ooh, people acting badly, you know.
Yeah, so it was a fun episode. It was a dramatic episode to watch. Mm-hmm. I was, like, fully in it and, like, yeah, I just feel like we're kind of entering the dark, the darkness that lurks at the end of season four. And we're definitely like entering it in this episode for sure. And yeah, so much is going to go down. It's really like that like saying I think ASP has said before of like Gilmore Girls, it's kind of just like la 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 la. And then they save like a big drama for like boom out. Like it's just hits you. And we're being hit in this episode for sure with the consequences of so many actions. Well, no, not the consequences aren't necessarily arriving yet, but we like know they
will.
They're building. They're building.
We only have 3 episodes left, right, in this? Or is it?
19, 20, 21, 22, probably 4.
There's so much that still has to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to be action-packed.
On a roller coaster.
Yeah.
We're like right at the peak of the roller coaster, probably.
I know.
Apex, climax.
Yeah.
There's Apex, our graduate analysis of storylines for you. Did you know the climax of a story is at the end of the rising action and then there's a falling action?
I would kind of say that maybe we're at the rising action, actually.
Yeah. 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 I think that's accurate. Speaking of rising action,
okay.
Our Talking Fast segment, which is all about the Talking Fast action.
I think it's my turn.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll pull up my timer. All right. On your mark, get set, go.
So the big thing this episode is Richard and Jason are expanding while they're out golfing with their new employee partner. I don't know. They run into Floyd, who asks them to have a dinner. This dinner is the first time Lorelai's meeting the parents, but it also goes pretty badly when Floyd says that he's going to be suing Richard and Jason. Meanwhile, Rory has another run-in with Dean, and Dean says that he's quitting school, and Rory complains about Lindsay, and she hears it, and then oh gosh I thought I was doing so well.
You were getting there. You were getting there.
Thanks.
Obviously, to pick up right where you were leaving off at the buzzer, the second plot of the episode is the Rory, Dean, and Lindsay thing. And I think, yeah, the only other thing to add is Lindsay will overhear Rory's complaints in a very awkward moment. And also Dean will like approach her, and we can talk about that horrible scene later. And then the third, the C plot of the episode is the fun plot with Kirk and Taylor and the stinking eggs around the town square. That is like very iconic and memorable, I think. Mm-hmm. So very it's Stars always Hollow-y. Good to have like a silly Stars Hollow plot to accompany the more serious plots in the story as a nice like comic relief. So I did appreciate that.
Yeah, that's very true. Thank God for Kirk. And Taylor and his toupee.
And Taylor and his tan and his toupee, which we are introduced to in our cold open at Luke's. What a smooth transition.
Nice.
We're at Luke's. Lorelai is sitting with Sookie and Jackson, who we haven't seen in a while. Jackson, we haven't. So it's good to see him. Davey's there, a real baby. Lorelai is feeding him. They're talking about, like, when you say open for the plane or whatever, what did you say to a baby before planes? So it was like choo-choo, and I don't know if that matters so much. But they're chatting. Luke is grumpy about babies, of course. And then in walks Taylor looking tan, looking like he has a toupee that everyone is going to make jokes about throughout the episode. But he, like, refuses to acknowledge.
It's a completely different color from the rest of his hair.
Oh, Taylor. But he's back from the Caribbean, you know, feeling fresh. But he has arrived to a smell. Everyone in the diner begins to talk about a certain smell in the town square. And we see in the background that Kirk is getting a little worked up, a little antsy. He's acting a little suspicious. But at this point, he keeps the secrets to himself, and we're left to wonder what's gonna happen with this smell.
Yeah. Kirk says something that was almost my Rory's bookshelf. He threatens that he will get medieval on their ass for whoever is hiding a skunk under their porch or whatever.
Uh-huh. That is good.
Yeah. All sorts of things you can say about the perception of medieval violence.
Yeah.
But I have a better Rory's bookshelf later on.
Oh, good. I don't... My Rory's bookshelf is silly.
Well, so. That's nice. Silly is good.
Yeah. Silly can be good.
Our next scene, we're at the inn, and this is a pretty short scene just to set some stuff up. There's a bookshelf that was apparently custom made for the inn, although it looks like a pretty basic bookshelf.
I'm pretty sure I own that bookshelf. Like, really? It's so basic.
Yeah, just like one, two shelves, waist height. But Michelle and Dean are moving it back and forth all around the inn while Lorelai and Sookie try to figure out where it looks best. Michelle is complaining the whole time, as usual. And then Dean shows his strength, I guess, by lifting it up. And his wingspan, that's what he shows. By lifting it all up himself and moving it around. The verdict, though, is that it doesn't fit in the inn, but Rory should have it. So that's going to set up future stuff. And then also we get a little bit of Lindsay. She arrives and she and Dean have a cute moment. She's just like picking something up and everybody's cooing over them. And It's an interesting start to the Dean and Lindsay trajectory.
Definitely. I was thinking during the scene, like, is Dean Tom's only employee?
It seems like it.
We see him every so often now, and with this like bookshelf bit, I want to say for the record, I moved like multiple bookshelves on my own into my office the other day, and I think you're right that what he's displaying is more about wingspan, because like they're not that heavy if you don't have the books on them, at least like, you know, ones like what Dean has, which are not like very solid at all, honestly. So I was like, justice for Michelle, because he definitely could have like, I, you know, it is what it is. I probably don't need to read into it that much, but I guess I'm as like impressive as Dean is what I want to say. And then
well, yay.
Yay for me. And I also wanted to highlight Tom in this scene, who is quite peeved that they did not order this bookshelf through him, and that is the reason that it doesn't fit and all of that. And he gets my just sass attack when he says, if you ordered it from me, you wouldn't be experiencing the psychological trauma. Speaking of, you know, psychological trauma of the episode, the like bookshelf and Lindsay and Dean, like, I guess all of those things, they're joking about those things causing the psychological trauma, because I guess Michelle is like lonely, and they're talking about like the deans of the world always get the Lindsays and
trying to make him straight.
Or in general, like they're all like just reflecting on, I don't know, young love and how they don't have, I didn't really quite get it, but I like the sassy line from Tom, of course.
Tom is always, he like throughout this whole scene, he's just kind of interjecting little quips like that. It's pretty great.
Huffing and puffing.
After this, though, we get another quick-ish scene at Friday night dinner, in which Lorelai spends a good 3 minutes talking about anvils and the disappearance of anvils and Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner. We also find out the important piece of information, which is that Richard and Jason have expanded their business and acquired Bob.
Bob, one man.
It's hard to tell whether he's going to be a partner or if it's just like an underling and they're getting all of his clients as well. But they're expanding, so they're doing well, which of course is threatening to others.
More on that later.
Exactly.
The next day or so, we are at Taylor's shop with two P's, of course. And we get a follow-up on the situation with the smell. Kirk comes in and is clearly, you know, just too guilty to let this secret go. He's like a character in a Poe, like a Poe story, you know, driven mad by their, like, whatever, their psychological trauma, as we say.
Sticking his hands in the candy, without knowing it.
Ooh, yeah. It was Poe's birthday recently, like a few days ago. So that's why that was on my mind. Spooky. But yeah, Kirk confesses to Taylor and they do some math and realize that there's nearly 60 rotting eggs in the square currently. And there's no map, unfortunately. And I think, like, I distinctly recall the first time, like, watching this episode and this plot and realizing, like, oh, do people, like, actually do egg hunts with real eggs? Because my family, we always did, like, plastic eggs that are filled with candy. So I was, like, it was news to me that they would ever, like, use real eggs. Like, what's your experience with egg hunts?
We did both in my family. Like, we'd have real eggs and then also the plastic ones. But I think my parents, like, we just did our egg hunts inside. So my parents knew very well where all the eggs were. I never did, like, a big community egg hunt or anything. Those kind of sound like mayhem, where, like, all the kids are just set loose at the same time to stampede across the town square or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't think we ever lost an egg, though, or left one to rot.
We, like, would do it at family gatherings, and so it was still, like, at a size where, you know, we probably had, like, 30 eggs in total or something like that. And we have, like, lost them before. Like, you know, my grandma will find, like, in her flowers, like, in the spring or something, like, oh, there's an egg. But it's just not a catastrophe as this would be.
Just, like, a stash of chocolate.
Yeah. I don't even see the point of hunting for eggs if you don't get candy, so.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, it was fun. You just get to, like, make them all pretty and stuff, and then it's competition, I guess, also. Our next scene is golfing, which we haven't seen since Rory went golfing, I think, with Richard.
Yeah, do you think this is the same set or the same place?
I don't know. I kind of assume so, but I wasn't very observant.
We're more focused on her hat at the time, I think.
That's true. But Jason is not very good at golf. In fact, he's like about how I would be at golf. He causes a lot of divots. But Bob is there, and we find out Bob's wife is very excited about being integrated into all this, kind of, I assume, because of she's going to be in Emily's sphere now. We find out later that Emily hates, or we found out earlier that Emily hates Bob's wife.
Yeah, they called her a, like, adult of a wife.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like she's a much younger woman. Which, as we see in the revival, Emily does not respect.
Doesn't have the patience for. Yeah.
But we also then get the big stuff from this scene, which is Floyd arriving.
Yeah.
And he is very jolly. He seems very cordial. He asks Richard about Emily, talks about how his wife misses Emily, and then suggests that they set up a dinner, and they agree to do that. It's all very, like, it seems all very innocent, but as we see later, Emily reacting to this, there's a lot to dissect from this interaction, like who invited who, where to, what could it possibly mean?
Right.
So it's a lot of social language, I guess.
I know, there's a lot, like, boiling under the surface. And I was just thinking about, like, Floyd is such, like, a smooth operator.
Yeah. He's
like, the way terrible. He just, like, gets Richard into this dinner, he's like, oh, my, like, my wife. And then while we're at it, why not invite Jason? And, like, so he just, devious. Like, maneuvers everything into place so easily.
Yeah, and then we'll see later, he, like, lulls everybody into comfort and then drops the bomb.
Well, the mid-cigar. Yeah.
Wow.
The last thing to say about this scene for me is, like, on Jason's bad golfing skills, which I found, like, so relatable and, like, endearing to me, you know? And he said, like, why can't businessmen do business over air hockey? Like, I'm great at air hockey. And I thought that was so funny. Yeah. And, like, I think we've seen before that Jason is, like, marked as sort of, like, of a younger generation of business people and, like, is different from Richard. But he's also like shown to be very like good at what he does and ambitious and competitive and whatnot. So like part of me actually was fairly surprised that he's not good at golf, because it's that almost seemed to me like something he would have in his skill set, or like that he would have done with his dad and mm-hmm. like for so long, that I was sort of surprised he's so bad at golf. But like I kind of see why they added it in there to like make him different, like clearly yeah. different from others, the older guys.
Yeah, that's a good point. You'd think that he would have like taken private golf lessons or something so that he could mm-hmm. show people up the next time, which he promises to do later on. But
yeah, maybe he was rebellious.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna go to my golf lessons, Dad. I'm gonna play air hockey in our basement.
Wow, way to go, Jason.
Yeah.
Oh, next we have the culmination of the bookcase scene. We're at Yale and Dean arrives. We've never seen him come to Yale before, I think, so it's great that he, I guess, found the dorm with no problem. Seems unlikely. Yeah.
While carrying kind of a huge out of bookcase. Place. Yeah.
Yeah. They quickly find out that there's no place for the bookcase there, and Rory, I think, gives a very astute description of how Lorelai came to send the bookcase to her, which is she's like, there's a bookcase and I like books, so mm-hmm. that's as far as it got, and it seems accurate.
My Rory's bookshelf is this bookshelf.
How literal.
I know. I unfortunately though, the thing about this bookshelf is that it's only Rory's bookshelf for like a couple minutes, because mm-hmm. at the end of the scene it is sent back. So poor bookshelf. We don't really ever know where that bookshelf ends up.
Yeah.
Maybe with Dean and Lindsay. Lane. Yeah, give it to Lane.
Yeah,
seriously.
She has a brand new apartment.
She has like nothing in her apartment. It's yeah. a good point.
But we then get a little update. Rory's asking how everything is going, and Dean mentions that he is taking a couple semesters off school to work. All legitimate. Rory does not think that this is legitimate. She pretty much lectures him at this point about how once you get out of school, you lose momentum and you'll never go back, which is very, you know, pot calling the kettle black, or foreshadowing, or whatever you want to say for her.
Burn.
Yeah. Very soon she will be taking her own break.
Wow.
But also, Dean says something which I thought was very interesting, especially to be said in the early 2000s, and it couldn't be more true, is that college doesn't guarantee you a job anymore. It's not like for their parents. And Rory is being a huge snob about him working in construction, which
yeah,
I would just like to say a lot of construction jobs pay much better than a lot of like the office jobs that you can hope to get right out of college, you know.
Yeah. And do you want to be able to drive to your office job? Do you want to be able to be in an office?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you need these things to be constructed.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, she's very like anti-trade, which
yeah, she did the old just going to work in construction. Yeah. Like the use of mm-hmm. just in that fashion is always like key to elitism.
Yeah.
As if it's something smaller. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that's a microcosm of the whole of society. Mm-hmm. We tend to be very like down on the trades, despite the fact that we need all of them to live in the society we live in.
Yeah.
I'm saying that as somebody with no trade skill whatsoever.
Yeah. Same. But I say it with appreciation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I will also like note that Rory really, in this scene and then also shortly later in the scene with Lane, she does not have a firm understanding of like what you need money for
yeah.
in your early life. Like Lane also, she's probably left school at this point, I think we can assume.
Mm-hmm.
She's working at Luke's and has her own apartment. Like Dean and Lindsay are doing their thing. Like, and Rory just doesn't understand, like, well, what do you need the extra money for?
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't understand why they need more money. And he's talking about, like, we have the goal of getting a townhouse by the end of the year, which is, like, a very reasonable mm-hmm. thing for, like, a young couple like that, getting your place. Like, And she just doesn't seem to understand, like, what they would need the money for, or, like, why can't that kind of thing wait? And it's like, yeah, she just doesn't really understand the, like, reality of mm-hmm. money in that way, which isn't a big yeah. surprise, but, like, it really is a stark difference between her and Dean. And, like, this really does echo their conversations they had about college when they were dating. Mm-hmm. And it seems like nothing has really changed for her, even though it's, like, later in time. She still is in the same kind of mindset.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
Rory needs to grow up. Maybe she will after she takes her own break from school.
Well, yeah, we'll get there. I'm just, like, she has such a soft landing, like, staying I at know. Her grandparents' yeah. pool house. Like, yeah.
She still doesn't have to buy anything for herself.
Exactly.
She doesn't even have to live in a rundown apartment with Paris and Doyle for very long. She just moves into a penthouse with Logan, you know. She doesn't yeah. have to work very hard for things.
Mm-hmm. Even when she's struggling in the revival with, like, not mm-hmm. having work, she still had, like, she said, like, what wasn't, didn't she have an apartment in Brooklyn or something? Yeah. Or Queens?
And she, like, was able to fly back and forth to England all the time.
Uh-huh. Like, and then she chose to give the apartment up and then could just go stay at, like, any number of places. Like, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Anywho, back to the town square. This is probably, I think this is later in the day or maybe mm-hmm. the next day or so. They are going about retrieving all of these eggs, of course. Taylor's gathered up a bunch of volunteers. He's giving a speech that is very passive-aggressive toward Kirk. Poor Kirk Poor is, like, so passionate and enthusiastic, like, trying to support Taylor and trying to, like, drum up enthusiasm to, like, we're going to get this done. He's kind of trying to, like, cover his tracks. And in the crowd, Jackson is there, and he gets my Lorelai's Closet for the beautiful nice. Coat he is wearing, which actually reminds me of the Evermore coat, which is, like, Taylor Swift's album Evermore on the cover. She's wearing it's, like, her back, and she's mm-hmm. you see this coat she has, and it's, like, kind of this, like, deep red and orange plaid sort of thing, and, like, people have looked into it. It's, like, this expensive coat. But there was at a time an Old Navy flannel that looked very close to the coat. So, like, a lot of people got that flannel, including myself. And I'm like, Jackson wore that coat before Taylor Swift wore the coat. So
yeah.
We could post a comparison and see if people agree. Kind of like how you made the point that Taylor wore the sweaters before Chris Evans, right? Mm-hmm. In Knives Out.
I'm writing a note for that.
Good.
I also had two awards in this scene.
Ooh.
I gave the Assembly of Stars Hollow people my Stars Hollow moment.
Very good, yeah.
It was very... They were all joking, making fun of Taylor's toupee. There were some people who looked grumpy to be there, but they were all still volunteers to do this ridiculous job, so... Very Stars Hollow.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave Jackson an award as well. I gave him my Jess Sass Attack for doing one of those toupee guy says what jokes to Taylor, who then says what, and then Kirk explains the joke. I was first introduced to this kind of joke from Wayne's World, where Gus Barry, I think multiple times, asks people, a sphincter says what? And then they say what, of course. So classic joke style.
A classic joke, yeah. I feel like Jackson was making the most of his appearance in this episode. Definitely. You know, he was really had some standout moments.
Yeah. After this, I also loved Kirk's pep talk, but I didn't write it down. He just, like, Sean Gunn in this episode, there needs to be an award for him for this entire show, because he carries the comedy on his back
so much,
so often.
Yeah, I agree.
Amazing. So after this, we go to Jason's really quickly, where inexplicably Lorelai is trying to find a place for a plant. We've never seen her be a plant person before.
They were like, we just need them to be doing something in the scene as they have dialogue. So, like, what about this plant we have here?
weird. Mm-hmm. But the main purpose of this scene is to establish that they're both pretty nervous about meeting or about going to the dinner with Floyd and Carol, because it's on Friday, so that means Lorelai and Rory will be there. And Lorelai is going to be meeting the parents, even though nobody knows that that's the relationship. I mean, as far as we know at this point.
I think nobody knows. Yeah. Yeah.
And I gave, Jason is explaining that his parents hate every girl he's ever dated. And I gave mine Rory's bookshelf to his reference of Oedipus. He said it says it's like a reverse Oedipal complex or whatever, that they hate all the girls that he's ever dated. So I thought I would give a little bit of Oedipus Rex story, which is a Greek.
It's always a good time to talk about Oedipus. Yeah.
It's a Greek play, I believe. I don't remember the exact dates. I probably should have looked that up. But, you know, from the classical Greek era. And it's very famous because of specifically in the 21st century, because of how Freud worked with Oedipus. But the basic plot is that Oedipus's parents are given this prophecy that he will be the death of both of them and marry his mother. To prevent this, they send him away to try and, you know, circumvent prophecy, which never works out. They should have listened to their own stories. And it ends up that Oedipus finds his way back there, but he's grown up. They don't recognize him. And by accident, he ends up killing the man who's actually his father. But then his mother falls in love with him and they get married and live together for some time, I think, before it's all discovered. And it all, of course, goes badly, as you would expect. Mm-hmm. And so Freud's theory is that every man is in love with his mother, and all, like, the person he's looking to marry is basically a version of his mother. And that's what's called the Oedipal complex, mm-hmm. Thanks to Freud.
Right. And so how, well, I'll add quickly, it was written by this guy called Sophocles.
Oh, yeah. No big deal.
No big deal. I think I read Oedipus Rex in maybe my first year of college, mm-hmm. but I also read the play Antigone in high school, which is about Oedipus's daughter, I believe. And I think it might have been written first, but in terms of chronology, it happens after the mm-hmm. events of Oedipus Rex. And I remember so distinctly my high school teacher, like, swearing to us, like, you cannot call the play Antigone. Like, Antigone. High schoolers, of course, because Antigone is spelled, like, anti and then gone. And so that was, like, one of the things she felt really strongly about was, like, do not joke about Antigone and call it Antigone. And then also she refused for us to call the Frankenstein's like creature. We couldn't call it the monster. We could only call him like the creature or whatever. Mm. So it's just funny the things you remember about like classes seriously. From high school. So I do remember Oedipus in that way. But of course the Freud, the Oedipus stuff. What do you think Jason means by this being like the opposite of
I was trying to figure out exactly what, and my conclusion is that it's a misplaced pop culture reference. Like, it just doesn't make sense in the context, because if it was a reverse Oedipal complex, then potentially they would fall in love with any girl he dates or something like that. It just doesn't make sense that the reverse Oedipal complex would be them hating all the girls that he dates.
Yeah,
that just doesn't track. So I think that it was just like a name drop type of thing in the wrong. And I think it's often, I mean, it's such a common phrase, but people don't always know exactly what it means. They tend to just use it as like a kind of messed up or taboo type of relationship, without always knowing the full story. So I think it's like, it's not a big deal that it's misused here. It's just kind of normal in a way. You know how people miss your sayings.
Right, of course. It's not like Jason probably read Sophocles' play, guess. He could have, you know, like, I guess I did, so maybe he could.
Yeah, it's a great, great play. If you ever, It's like one of the few Greek things that I read in undergrad that has stuck like so clearly in my mind. I haven't read it since, but I remember the scenes and the plot and everything very clearly.
Yeah, it's good. Like, Greek tragedies are so, like, fun, you know? Yeah. Like, they always think they can escape their fate, but they never can.
Everybody always dies in bloody, bloody ways.
Funny.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Final thing about this scene in my notes. Well, two things, actually. Did you notice the sweater Jason was wearing? It was the cool sweater I pointed out last. Gotta go back and see his sweater. It's really good. It's the white one with, like, the, And then, the second thing is, the dog is still not there.
Yeah, what is up with that?
They couldn't, I guess. Do you think they, like, ran out of their dog budget with the Kirk thing? Like, they're like, we can't afford any more dog actors. Like,
that's probably true. I bet they had written this scene for the dog, but then they couldn't get the dog, so they had to put a plant in instead.
It's a plant. Let's adjust. Funny. Wow.
Poor Cyrus.
Okay, yeah. Okay, moving ahead, we are back in the town square, and Rory is visiting town. As she told Dean earlier, there's going to be a party, and she has a paper to write, so she chose to come home to Stars Hollow. Lane is catching her up as they're walking around the square, including many opinions about music that went a little bit over my head, but, you know, it's fun for them, of course. And then they also end up talking about the eggs of it all. And then from there, they walk into the market. This is when, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, Rory is helping Lane shop for food. And Lane is kind of in the tricky position of not having that much money, having two guys that are also needing to eat. And then I guess she also doesn't have much of a kitchen or ways to, like, prepare food. So her options are very small. And Rory, like, picks out some things that Lane approves of, but other things, like marshmallows, I guess, are too much of a luxury for Lane. So there's kind of that discrepancy between the two of them. But I would say the most important thing that happens in this scene is that Rory starts to go off on Lindsay and the situation. She's kind of like, you know, this part I, like, can't totally, like, blame Rory for necessarily, because, like, I've definitely gossiped about, like, couples from my high school or, like, couples, you know, and you, like, judge their decisions. But, like, as an outsider, you know, like, you understand, like, you don't have an impact, but you just kind of, like, judge. I guess Rory thinks she, I don't know. Either way, Rory's gossiping and talking loudly, and they round a corner to find who? Lindsay, of course. And this was my Stars Hollow moment, actually, because, like, it's such a small town. You're in the grocery store, like, the one grocery store. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't be talking at, like, a normal volume about someone and risk, like, running into them or running into someone who knows them. And, like, I have had this problem before. Like, I've made a rule, like, you can't gossip about, like, work when you're at work, you know? Like, it's just too risky, right? Like, and Rory learns that lesson here because she's just been saying, like, why doesn't Lindsay get a job? What does Lindsay do all day? Well, apparently one thing she does is get groceries because she's right there. And, like, it's a classic awkward encounter.
Yeah. We have a couple of listener opinions about this scene. The first person sent us two separate messages that are very funny. I'm going to try and read them with the appropriate tone, I guess. So they say, poor Lindsay, but I hate Lindsay, but Rory's right, but she shouldn't open her mouth about it. And then also, shut the F up, Rory. So I feel like that's a good sentiment. Like, we understand the sentiment there. Like, it is kind of a, as you were saying, it's normal for people to rant about or, like, vent about stuff or kind of gossip. I feel like that's demonized often, but it's also an important thing in society that we just gossip. But you have to be careful about where you gossip and who could be overhearing you. Also, we have another listener who said, Rory should have kept her school opinions to herself, but I like the drama of Lindsay overhearing. And I, I said earlier, it's a good episode because of the drama.
Absolutely. Like, without the encounter with Lindsay, this would be a very, like, oh, yeah, Rory complaining kind of scene. Like, we've seen that before, but this is, like, it furthers the plot because you know, like, this is going to affect, like, the relationships of all three people involved. Yeah, you can't come back from this with no consequences. Yeah.
It's also just so cringe. Secondhand embarrassment, all of that.
Painful.
I'm sure we've all said, like, been gossiping or something, or said something that the person overheard that we didn't want them to overhear. I think that's a universal experience.
Oh, it feels so bad.
I know. I have this, like, my terrible instinct when that happens is to double down, and it's not good. I'll just be like, yeah, I don't care that they heard it. Which I obviously deep down, do.
You do care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. I do, like, not in the way that Rory was implying of, like, why doesn't Lindsay have a job? Because she's kind of being, like, Lindsay is so, like, needy and, like, not contributing, but she, whatever. But on, like, from a purely, like, friendly standpoint, I should say, like, I do kind of wonder why she doesn't have a job or, like, what are Lindsay's interests? Like, what does she like? Like, what would she like to work? Like, she could have, like, even, like, a part-time. I'm just, like, she could work at the beauty store. She could work at the bookstore. Like, I am kind of curious. Like, I think we said before, like, she's kind of a housewife in training, but she seems to, like, still be in training. She's, like, they don't show her as skilled at housewifing, but then also, like, we're unsure if she even has a house to housewife in, so it's like, what does she do all day? I really am curious from, like, a genuine standpoint.
And I could understand if they were, like, actively trying to start a family or something, but it doesn't seem to be the case yet, so I would just, like, there's definitely plenty of housework to do, but when there's not children and everything, it can't possibly take up your whole day every day, you know? So you'd get bored, I would think. But maybe she volunteers. I bet that's something that a lot of people do when they don't have a job and don't need to have a job, but are also have free time.
We didn't see her volunteering to find the eggs, though.
That's true. That's one of the great opportunities of the town. Anyways, our next scene is at Luke's later that evening, I believe, and Kirk is delirious. He's been searching for eggs for hours and hours and hasn't slept. And Taylor comes in and very rudely, I thought, assumes that Kirk is doing all this just to ruin Taylor's life and ruin the town. And he thinks that all of this is just Taylor or Kirk posturing, and he's not really, like, severely upset that he lost all of these eggs. I just thought Taylor was being totally unfair. It was uncalled for. Kirk is out here, like, giving his all to find these eggs. He didn't do this on purpose.
And plus, like, as grumpy as Taylor's acting, I feel like secretly he's, like, happy and feels vindicated that, like, the town fell to pieces in a sense when he was gone. He's kind of like, I'm the only one who can do this, and now I have to pick up the pieces when I come back and whatever. Like, I feel like he's secretly loving all of this.
Yeah. He conveniently never heard of the success of the Founders Firelight Festival that Kirk organized. Come on.
Even Luke looks sympathetic in this scene toward Kirk. Like, you can tell he's starting to feel bad for him because Taylor is just, like, heaping on to him all of this criticism and whatnot, which I thought, well, as we'll see, it leads to a very sweet moment between Luke and Kirk later on. But, you know, before we get to that happy moment, we have, like, a whole lot of drama to unpack before then, with our second Friday night dinner of the episode. And, you know, let's just set the scene. We're out on the patio for once, which is different. And We've got a whole lot of drinks on the drink cart. Lorelai is looking nice, which everyone keeps commenting on, even though I'm with her. I'm like, she looks nice every single Friday night dinner. It would work better if they actually had her on other weeks look like she came straight from work. But they never do that, even though they want to act like they do. Yeah. And the two guests of honor arrive, Floyd and I think Carol or something like that. Yeah, they're chatting at first, you know, classic jokes about all the maids Emily fires. Richard cracks one of like Western mathematical principles can't accommodate the question of how many maids Emily has fired, which is like, wow. They go to dinner. Things are going like well-ish so far. Then Rory leaves early, mentions her paper again, which I was like, that's consistent, I guess. Weird to like go home on a Friday night. And I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, she leaves. That's the important thing. And they do the very classic separation of the sexes where the men go to have their cigars and the women go elsewhere and wait for the men to smoke their cigars.
This reminds me of that scene in Titanic where Rose tells Jack that the men are going to go and smoke their cigars and congratulate each other on being masters of the universe.
Very typical. And it is the... in the midst of the cigar smoking, when everything kind of goes to shit, they are chatting as boys do. Richard is telling this pretty interesting story about like the brand of cigars he likes and how he couldn't get them from the cellar. And so he went around the cellar and bought all of them, like more than he could ever smoke in a lifetime. And then he ended up selling them back to the cellar. And so it's this like supposed to be an anecdote that demonstrates like what Richard Gilmore would do, which Floyd references later when he's like, yeah, I'm cutthroat, but like this is what you would do, like what a serious good businessman would do, which it turns out in this situation is Floyd letting them know that he's suing both of them. And it's very calculated. He lets them know he's suing them, and then he leaves and they like follow them out. They follow him out. It's getting heated. The women are like, what's going on? And he lets them know also that he's had like, Jason is like, I guess Jason is wondering, like, how he knows some information. Like, he knows about this lunch he had with a client that was supposedly supposed to be, like, non-compete. You can't do that. You can't talk to that client. And so he's using that as a piece of evidence against them in this lawsuit, potentially. And Jason's like, how do you even know that? Do you have a PI on me? So apparently that's something Floyd does, just, like, investigates people. And so then Floyd, in just like a general fuck you moment, like just says Lorelai and Jason are dating. Like he like says there's no reason for him to tell anyone this, but he really just like wants to like rub salt in the wound, I think. And so everyone is left really awkwardly, and Emily and Lorelai obviously have this weirdness because now Emily knows Jason and her are dating. And then Richard and Jason are in this awkward position because this is Jason's father who's doing this to them. And Richard is kind of worried about, like, how has Jason been acting? Like, has he, like, he did have this lunch. Was that against, like, was that illegal? And so he's kind of questioning Jason's practices. And Jason is trying to be, like, gaining his trust back and telling him he's going to solve it. And Richard is like, yeah, okay, by the end. But, like... you kind of suspect already that you're like, clearly Richard does not trust Jason after all of this. So that was a lot. What were your thoughts?
I actually gave my Friday night dinner to Floyd in general. I just thought he was such a, I don't know, unfeeling asshole through all of this. It was like psychotic. Yeah. And I don't know if I'm using that word correctly, but it was like he had no empathy for people whatsoever. He was just like, I am a ruthless businessman. I'm going to take all of you down. But I'm not just going to take you down. I'm going to make you first feel like we're having a great time. Like we're all friends. Everything's laid to rest. All of our conflicts are gone. And then I'm just going to pull the rug right out from under you and potentially ruin your entire life because we find out that Richard had used his pension as collateral for the business, which we find out Emily didn't know. But so Floyd knows very well that he's not just like getting revenge on Richard for, well, Richard didn't even leave. He was kind of ousted from the company. So he's not just getting revenge on Jason for taking some clients. He's like utterly destroying two people's lives and their families' lives. And he's just like getting joy from it. He just doesn't feel bad at all. And one of those people is his son. That's just like unconscionable. I can't believe it. Floyd is just an asshole. And it's worse that he seems nice. Emily was right to be like nitpicking every single thing he had said at the golf course to figure out what he really meant. Like, we needed Emily in there in the cigar room figuring out what he was actually saying.
Yeah, he is like brutal, so cutthroat, so calculated. And you're like, the lack of emotions and empathy is really like the telling sign here. I think you're right that the only emotion he has is like the sick joy of like when his machinations like unfold. And like, based on what we see at the end of the episode, part of me thinks like he knew all along in this lawsuit. Like, as Jason says, like he's like, he doesn't actually want to do this lawsuit. And I think that's true. And it's like, I feel like he's really not trying that much to fuck over Richard. It's more about fucking over Jason, because I think he knows like Richard can find a way out of this, which he does, but it's like Jason who will be left with nothing, and that's just so sad.
His own and son. Carol clearly knew going into this whole thing what was gonna happen, because as the men are storming out, she's like, well, I guess that's my cue to leave. So she was also like
in on it.
She was being so nice to Emily and all of that, and then knowing what was going down in the other room, it was just, ouch. Damn, poor Carol. Jason. Yeah.
Poor Jason, indeed. So he and Lorelai flee with a bottle of vodka is their plan. Jen, because he's like, I've got a great bottle of vodka. And she's like, but what are you going to drink, Jen? So yeah, we'll come back to this. But before we do have a nice little uplifting scene in between there. It's brief, though. We are back at town, and Kirk is just having a breakdown. You know, he's at his physical and psychological limits. He is in distress trying to find these last 12 eggs, and he's on the ground, and he looks up and sees a pair of boots, and who is it but Luke. And Luke drops a plastic bag in front of him. And it's the last 12 eggs that Luke has found.
Aww.
So nice. And classic Luke is trying to be like, it's not a big deal. Like, don't talk about it. It's fine. Just tell Taylor you found them. And yeah. And so he walks away. But then Kirk is just screaming after him, I love you. I love Luke Danes. And Luke immediately regrets it that he did this. But I don't think he really regrets it. Yeah. You know, he's just acting like he regrets it. But, you know, I think once before you had been talking about, like, Luke acts so annoyed by Kirk all the time, but like underneath that is a friendship, you know? And so it's so nice when it pops up genuinely. And here was a great sign of like, Luke does care about Kirk and he really helps him out. And who knows how long it took for him to find the 12 eggs? Who knows where they were? Like, Kirk apparently had hidden some up really high in trees. So like, yeah, it was just a very sweet moment.
Yeah, the scene was my gazebo moment. Nice. For those reasons exactly. It was just very, very touching after we just watched two people get decimated by Floyd. I do love the Luke-Kirk friendship. I do wonder, though, how hard can it really be to find rotten eggs?
Yeah.
When they smell so bad? Can't you just follow your nose?
I almost wonder if they're, like, implying that because there's so many, just, like, everywhere smells bad. And so, like, it's so ubiquitous that you can't, like,
they just need to get a dog.
Get a dog, yeah.
Kind of after, during this scene, Rory is driving past through town. And Dean approaches her car very quickly. I thought this was very, like, I better make sure all my doors are locked kind of behavior.
Yeah, but was he, like, waiting outside hoping Rory would drive by? Like, how did he even know? Like,
I thought this doesn't really make sense, but his movements in this scene gave me huge Sasquatch vibes. It was just the way he was moving. I was just like, wow, this is a creature of the wild approaching you.
That's so funny.
But he has Rory pull over, and then he pulls her into an alleyway to talk.
A dark alley. Very not sketchy sus. At all.
Yeah.
If you ever find yourself in an alley with someone else's spouse, mm-hmm. I feel like you should know immediately that probably something is up that shouldn't be going on.
Yep. They both kind of start frantically apologizing to each other for their fight at Yale. And then also Rory's like, I guess Lindsay heard me saying all this stuff about her. And Dean's like, yeah, she doesn't want me talking to you anymore. And I have thoughts about this. Usually when, like, you hear that a boyfriend or something doesn't want their girlfriend talking to certain people, I'd be like, that's a huge red flag.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's entirely justified. And it's like, Lindsay is picking up on stuff that we can see from their sexual chemistry in this scene, but they're still denying. It's like, they should not be around each other in any way. It's going to go badly. And Lindsay should be listened to. I think she had it right in this case.
Yeah, I agree. This scene was my Friday night dinner. Because I was in between this one and then the previous scene between Rory and Dean, especially when Rory said, like, I think that's a horrible decision about him quitting school. And it was like, well, you're not the third person in their marriage. Like, you don't really get to have, like, an opinion about their decisions that they make together. And here, what really, like, caught my eye was first that, like, after they've been, like, apologizing to each other and saying they're both the jerk or whatever, Dean says, like, sometimes it seems like you're the only one, like, who doesn't want him to settle, essentially. And so it's like, it's just, he's putting this, like, thing onto Rory in a weird way where, like, he's kind of, like, using her to then antagonize everyone else in his life and kind of, like, victimize himself and view her as, like, the one who can see his true, like, worth and whatever. And it's just so problematic. Yeah. And then what really gets to me is that there's almost this moment, I think, of, like, no return that kind of happens here. But it could have been a stopping point for them where after he says Lindsay doesn't want them to talk anymore, Rory says that's understandable. And there's, like, a beat. And so it's like, for a second there, Rory is like, yeah, I guess after everything that's happened, I can see why she wouldn't want you to talk to me. And that's too bad. But, like, she kind of accepts it. But then he says, like, but I don't want that to happen. And she says she doesn't want that to happen. So then they both kind of, like, I guess, agree to keep talking behind her wishes, you know, which is like, if before they thought they weren't doing anything wrong by being friends again, or, you know, like, they didn't explicitly have Lindsay's disapproval yet. Now they do. So, like, moving forward, they know they're doing something that Lindsay doesn't want them to do. Mm-hmm. Like, this is going into an even darker place. And, like, I feel like the mood of that is communicated because it's so, like, weird the way they, like, walk away from the alley. Mm-hmm. Like, Dean, they, like, walk away separately. And then Rory is just, like, at the entryway to the alleyway looking very, like, pensive, and it's just, like, very moody of an ending. So yeah, I guess I just saw it as, like, a turning point of sorts where it's like, it was already bad, but now this is, like, the beginning of the decline toward badness. Yeah,
there's something that Dean does when he's, like, trying to, I don't know, when he, like, is getting sexy that gives me such an ick. Like, in this scene, you can tell that he's, like, he and Rory, like, they're trying to build some sort of sexual chemistry between the two of them. So he's, like, kind of softening his voice and, like, leaning forward a bit towards her. Mm. And it just grosses me out so much. I don't know why.
The body language.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, I thought, like, I still continue to think he looks quite attractive, as I've said before. And I did think he looked very good, like, carrying the bookcase with, like, the wingspan earlier. Like, that was much more attractive than the stuff going on in this scene. I agree.
It's just going to get worse and worse.
Indeed.
After this, though, we have pretty much three quick scenes to finish off the episode. The first one is back at the Gilmore's house. Richard is kind of standing outside looking contemplative, and Emily comes up to him and is like asking whether he really did put up their his pension as collateral and everything. And he is just, his response is just, everything's going to be okay. So you kind of see in his face that he already has a plan. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like you can see in his face that he knows it's kind of a diabolical plan in a way, but it has to happen. Like the things, he'll sacrifice pretty much anything to make sure that he and Emily, especially Emily, is able to like continue to live her life as he thinks she deserves to. So
yeah,
he's willing to sacrifice Jason, I think.
Yeah, and he's like also, I think another clue is that he's like evasive when she asks, did you talk to Jason? Mm-hmm. He kind of like skirts the question and is just like, it's going to be okay more generally. So yeah, there's a lot of foreboding building mm-hmm. at this point. And it's sad because then in the next scene, Jason and Lorelai are drunkenly talking about how Jason is convinced like everything will be okay, like, which is so sad knowing what happens, because he's like thinking about the different ways he can work it out, and like now Lorelai and his relationship is public, so like they kind of wanted that to happen and all of that, and it's like poor Jason,
naive.
His plant has died as well, somehow. Which I think is a bit of like a sad symbol, for sure. And this all leads us to our final scene, which I gave my gazebo moment because I thought it has such a dramatic effect, and I remember it. And it's like, even though there is clearly foreshadowing of this, like, I still find it to be such a huge surprise, because we kind of come into it like after they've made this deal. So like, to set the scene, Richard is again at the golf course, and Jason and I talked about like, oh, it's okay, I'm gonna smooth things out and we're gonna golf soon, Richard and I, so like it's gonna be okay. So like when you see Richard golfing, you might think, oh, then Jason is gonna come into the frame and it's those two, but it's not. It is Floyd, and they're like they've already put like placements, they've already put things into place, and mm-hmm. Richard is saying like, oh yeah, so are we good about this, this, and that? And you learn that Richard has made out this arrangement with Floyd that he's going to have his company underneath Floyd's umbrella or something like that. But really, like, the logistics don't matter so much as the fact that they both say Jason is out. Like, he can't come. He's going to be left with, like, no clients, no company, no nothing, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a very unfortunate position to have. And then like, I don't know, you said in the like the other scene, Richard kind of looked like he knew that his plan was diabolical, and I was thinking about Richard's expression here, because I'm like, maybe he's like internally sad, but like he doesn't seem to show any remorse about the betrayal on the outside. Like, do you think he does? I don't know. I was just like, very like, it's so cold, and that's part of the drama of it for me.
I feel like he's justifying it in his head with the Lorelai stuff, like he's justifying that Jason isn't trustworthy, not just from like the potential lunch with that person, but also from lying about Lorelai. So I don't know. I feel like he's using that to tamp down any sort of guilt he might be feeling at this point.
Yeah.
Poor Jason.
Poor Jason.
Never thought I would have said that at the beginning of this season.
I know, man.
Yeah.
It's too bad. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what unfolds because of it.
Yeah.
Next week, I would think. Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. A lot of this insurance talk.
I know, like, when they were talking about like, oh, but he put his pension up as collateral, I was like, I'm just gonna assume that's a big deal, because like, I don't, like, I know pensions are great and all that, but I guess I just didn't I assumed like Richard has like generational wealth and like investments and all of that stuff. I didn't really think he was like using a salary to like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm just going to take their word for it on the money stuff.
All of the insurance talk reminded me of a good book recommendation I have for any fantasy lovers out there. Called The Justice of Kings by Richard Swan. The first book is like a, I don't know, kind of a murder mystery that becomes something much bigger. But part of it is this guy, like the main character is a justice. So he goes around dispensing justice for like rural towns and stuff. But part of it is he's like trying to learn how insurance works. It's like a fairly new concept for insuring like cargo and stuff. Because this is like set in a fantasy medieval times or whatever. So there's a lot of insurance explanation in it.
Oh.
It's a really good series. The third book comes out in February. I have pre-ordered it. I'm very excited.
Wow. I never like would have thought like a book recommendation involving insurance talk would be like a recommendation from you, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a small part of it. It also includes demons from hell, but you know.
Yeah. I do like stuff like that, though, like lawyer shows, medical shows. Like, it doesn't really matter that I don't understand, like, the language that they're talking necessarily. But it's just cool to, like, yeah, I get it. I see it.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that a lot of procedurals understand the language that they're talking either.
Yeah. So true.
Anyways, who was your MVP for this episode?
I think I will have to say my MVP is I guess I'm kind of between Jason and Kirk probably. Like I think I want to say Jason because I feel bad for him, but it's not necessarily that he like, I don't know, like maybe he'll be the MVP next week. I don't know. I'm gonna go with Kirk though, because of everything we've said. You know, poor guy, he made a mistake, he didn't make a map, and now he's regretting it, and Taylor is giving him such a hard time, and he is just doing the best he can, not sleeping or anything. And yeah, and like you said, Sean Gunn really, like, he just needs an award for what the work he does on the show.
Yeah, he does.
How about you?
I think I'm also gonna give mine to Kirk, because yeah, nobody else really acted greatly in this episode. I don't like Lorelai and Jason and Emily didn't do anything bad. They just also
but
didn't
not like
do
big
great
actions. Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Rory did bad things. So yeah, I'm gonna give it to Kirk. He gave us the entertainment, the lightheartedness, and I also just love his friendship with Luke. It's cute.
Yeah. If MVP stood for most villainous,
oh yeah, that'd
player
be Floyd.
That'd be Floyd. And Carol, even.
Yeah.
Carol was in on it. Shout out to Carol, villain too.
Yep.
Girl power.
Oh, dear.
All right. Well,
on that note,
talk soon. Thanks for listening to Talking Fast, a Gilmore Girls podcast.
Don't forget to rate and review us and share us with your friends. Join us on Instagram and TikTok at Talking Fast Podcast.
And join the conversation by emailing us your thoughts, talkingfastpodcast@gmail.com.